Scott's sermon today is inspired by the poem Manifesto, The Mad Farmer Liberation Front. And you have a copy of this as an insert in your order of service. But I'm not going to ask you to read it along with me. Love the quick profit, the annual raise, vacation with pay. Want more of everything ready-made. Be afraid to know your neighbors and to die. And you will have a window in your head. Not even your future will be a mystery anymore. Your mind will be punched like a card and shut away in a little drawer. When they want you to buy something, they will call you. When they want you to die for profit, they will let you know. So, friends, every day do something that won't compute. Love the Lord. Love the world. Work for nothing. Take all you have and be poor. Love someone who does not deserve it. Denounce the government and embrace the flag. Hope to live in that free republic for which it stands. Give your approval to all that you cannot understand. Praise ignorance, for what man has not encountered, he has not destroyed. Ask questions that have no answers. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is a forest that you did not plant, that you will not live to harvest. Say that the leaves are harvested when they are rotted into the mold. Call that prophet. Prophecy such returns. Put your faith in the 2 inches of humus that will build under the trees every 1,000 years. Listen to carrion. Put your ear close and hear the faint chatterings of songs that are to come. Expect the end of the world. Laugh. Laughter is immeasurable. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts. So long as women do not go cheap for power, please women more than men. Ask yourself, will this satisfy a woman satisfied to bear a child? Will this disturb the sleep of a woman near to giving birth? Go with your love into the fields. Lie down in the shade. Rest your head on her lap. Swear allegiance to what is mightiest your thoughts. As soon as the generals and the politicos can predict the motions of your mind, lose it. Leave it as a sign to mark the false trail, the way you didn't go. Be like the fox who makes more tracks than necessary and some in the wrong direction. Practice resurrection.
Bunny-themed merchandise and egg-shaped chocolates are one indication that Easter is upon us. Now, back in Texas, white plastic cross-shaped yard signs with "He is risen" in purple script are another indication. Now, when I was a little kid growing up in Texas, I would get very excited about Easter. And I would like to tell you that it was because this future minister was intrigued by that idea of "He is risen," but no, it was the candy. And the new clothes. I distinctly remember every year I would get a really cute plaid or checked sports coat in springtime colors and very much. New dress shoes with a buckle instead of laces, right? And, wait for it, a clip-on tie. Yes. So, just as I had associated Easter with candy and new clothes rather than theology in my youth, people tend to associate Kentucky with fried chicken rather than spirituality and activism. But, like Easter baskets, they're there and can be found if you look for them. I learned from my Disciples of Christ friends in seminary that they point to Cane Ridge, Kentucky, for the beginnings of the American Restoration Movement during the Second Great Awakening. These pioneers sought the unification of all Christians in a single body patterned after the Church of the New Testament. And notable for UUs who espouse a creedless faith, they believe the creeds kept Christianity divided. Now, perhaps more familiar to you is the name Thomas Merton. He's the Trappist monk who lived for many years in the Abbey of Gethsemane near Bardstown, Kentucky. He was a poet, social activist, and mystic, and wrote more than 70 books, mostly on spirituality, social justice, and a quiet pacifism. He's also one of the sources, he is the source of one of my favorite quotes, "Our job is to love others without stopping to inquire whether or not they are worthy." Which reminds me of a line from the Wendell poem Lucy just read, "Love someone who does not deserve it." I read another poem of Wendell Berry's a few weeks back during the cow mooing service. You obviously remember. Berry is a novelist, poet, environmental activist, cultural critic, and farmer. And he lives in Henry County, Kentucky. So I'll occasionally go back through poems and quotes filed away on my laptop and reread things I haven't thought about for a while. I came across Berry's manifesto, The Mad Farmer Liberation Front, a few months ago. I find it to be a powerful piece of writing that presents something new each time I read it. This last time I read it, the last line, "Practice resurrection," jumped out at me, both because I knew I was scheduled to preach on Easter and because it wasn't immediately evident to me what he meant by it. So I've thought a lot about it these past few weeks. Now, if you Google "practice resurrection," you'll find various essays and sermons describing the phrase in a very Christian context and interpreting Berry's essay to fit into a very Christian Easter mindset. After reflecting on the rest of the poem, however, I don't believe that that was his intent, because not to put too fine a point on it, he didn't capitalize the word resurrection, which would have made that intention very clear. But I understand why religious writers look for their story in the poem. The writings of skilled poets reveal a deep spiritual reality that resonate beyond the doctrine of any religion. Those of you who take copious notes while I preach will no doubt remember a few weeks ago, my talking about the big questions that people ask during some point in their lives. Certainly, one of the most formidable is, what happens after we die? Resurrection, in one form or the other, unsurprisingly, plays a major role in answering that question in many religions. The idea that there is something beyond this life is very attractive. Last week, Lucy told us about Hindus and their relationships with gods. Hindus hold to the doctrine that of reincarnation. At the time of death, Hindus believe, one's destination is dependent upon one's state of mind at the moment of passing and the degree and nature of one's unresolved karma. Although, like universalism, there's no doctrine of hell in Hinduism. Practitioners do believe that human beings who pass away full of rage, despair, or hopelessness are capable only of entering a spiritual realm populated by others with similar spiritual obstructions. Buddhism comes from Hinduism and as a result retains, as a formal point of doctrine, its belief in a system of reincarnation. They believe that an individual spirit is reborn, undergoes a series of rebirths, and must continue that cycle until the ultimate, until reaching a position, until reaching a state of enlightenment. Within the Islamic faith system, there is no reincarnation and no Son of God. One's reckoning is with Allah alone, and it is for the choices and actions undertaken in a single human life. Traditionally, Christians observe Easter to celebrate the eternal life they believe is made available by the resurrection of Jesus after his crucifixion. Now, while UUs will often claim both Jewish and Christian roots, most of the doctrine and structure of our faith is historically based on a decidedly liberal Christian faith tradition. However, I see a very Jewish attitude in a UU concept of an afterlife. We tend to believe focusing on the good we can do right now is a better use of our time. Practitioners of Judaism do not so much dismiss ideas of death, heaven, and hell as they choose to look beyond them and focus instead on the value of human life, which is regarded as sacred. They believe drawing conclusions about the specific nature of our relationship with God after our death is not particularly useful or helpful from a theological point of view. So, Barry uses a term loaded with significance for many when he advises practice resurrection. Resurrection is typically defined as a rising from the dead and, like I said, with a capital letter, the rising of Jesus from the dead. But Barry clearly wasn't using the word in this way. To practice resurrection in this way, dying, coming back to life, dying, coming back to life, simply strikes me as the height of indecisiveness. Resurrection also means arising again as from decay or disuse. The poet gives us lists of ways we can revitalize and add depth to our current life, transforming it into a new life of sorts. In the words of author Roger Housden, a new life requires a death of some kind. Otherwise, it is nothing new, but rather a shuffling of the same deck. What we die to is an outworn way of being in the world. We experience ourselves differently. We are no longer who we thought we were. So how might we know we are in a rut, shuffling the same old deck? If we're not living authentically, it may look something like what Barry describes in the first paragraph. Love the quick profit, the annual raise, vacation with pay. Want more of everything ready-made. Be afraid to know your neighbors and to die. And you will have a window in your head. Not even your future will be a mystery anymore. Your mind will be punched in a card and shut away in a little drawer. When they want you to buy something, they'll call you. When they want you to die for profit, they will let you know. When they want you to buy something, they will call you. Well, this was written in 1973. Now they send you an email. You've probably seen ads on social media or gotten an email for something you recently Googled. Your mind hasn't been punched in a card, but your browser history is available to retailers, much more efficient. Perhaps we do have windows in our head. So, what can we do to counteract this? Practice resurrection. Every day do something that won't compute, because being your authentic self is not going to make sense to a lot of people. Expect the end of the world. Laugh. Laughter is immeasurable. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts. But why does he tell us practice resurrection? Once we're living authentically, why keep changing things up? Our lives are going to change as a matter of course, one way or the other. Change is inevitable, except from a vending machine. Because some of us resist change, that's why. I know I do. I had a therapist once tell me, break your patterns and change things up. You leave for work at the same time every day and drive the exact same way. Change it up. I very carefully explained that I had configured the drive to carefully avoid school zones and traffic backups. It was the most efficient time and route, and to change it would defy logic. She didn't buy it. Some of us resist even inevitable change. But perhaps if we practice transitioning into voluntary new chapters of our lives with optimism and authenticity, we will be better prepared when involuntary changes come. Having practiced when difficult or even devastating challenges arise, we may be able to carry on more successfully. Being able to authentically stand by the truth of your own life and live it as passionately and as fully as you are able is not self-centered. It is a compassionate act you are doing for the world, if nothing else, as a model for others. So, little wonder Barry's poem immediately spins out into a concern for the world. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is the forest that you did not plant, that you will not live to harvest. Say that the leaves are harvested when they have rotted into the mold. Call that prophet. Prophesy such returns. Gardeners know about resurrection. Mary told us about the resurrection of Jenny's rose bushes. A few weeks ago, Freddie Farmer and Felicia Ferret learned about the value of compost in our gardens. Things dying, returning to the earth, and creating new life. Put your faith in the 2 inches of humus that will build under the trees every 1,000 years. Listen to carry on. Put your ear close and hear the faint chattering of the songs that are to come. Confucius is quoted as saying, if you think in terms of a year, plant a seed. If in terms of 10 years, plant trees. If in terms of 100 years, teach the people. Barry segues from tending to the rebirth of the earth itself to caring about people, for the well-being of women about to create life in particular. We are to practice the resurrection of nascent humans as well as our planet. Ask yourself, will this satisfy a woman satisfied to bear a child? Will this disturb the sleep of a woman near to giving birth? I've heard tell of people who travel many miles to watch baseball practice during spring training. People will go to the final dress rehearsal of hard-to-get-into popular music and theater productions. Many a parent and grandparent have proudly listened to a budding musician practice, or even practiced shooting hoops or playing catch with an upcoming sports star. Practice is not an isolated event. Practice resurrection. Live authentically into the life, into the truth of your own life. Others will see you practicing and enjoy and learn and gather strength from your example. And perhaps learn to practice resurrection themselves. So, on this Easter Sunday, when so many are celebrating resurrection with a capital R, perhaps we too can celebrate and practice resurrection with a small R. The resurrection of our own lives as we work to live more wholly and authentically. The resurrection of the earth as we work to protect and enhance her ability to be reborn. And the resurrection of the lives of others as we love them, stand beside them, and stand up for them. So, friends, every day do something that won't compute. Love someone who does not deserve it. Ask the questions that have no answers. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts. Practice resurrection.